Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Den Talks podcast is powered by denanywhere.com. You guys go to denanywhere.com now, no matter where you live in the world, and you can take our classes virtually and live. Go to denanywhere.com and sign up for just $29.99 a month. You get a limited access to our classes with over 150 a month to choose from. Plus, most of them are archived. So if you can't make the exact time, you can catch them later. We still also have our workshops and our certifications now all accessible to you no matter where you are. Go to denanywhere.com.
Welcome to Den Talks Podcast. This is Tal, your host and the founder of Den Meditation. We have a guest back on that I love having on, Larea, who is part of Love Without Reason and Lunch on Me, as I've mentioned so many times. She was one of the first people we interviewed, and you should go check out that first episode because she talks all about feeding the homeless on Skid Row and how you can change anybody's life, not just a homeless life, by just with these micro gestures. And she is a very impactful human being, an impactful speaker and talker. And so I love having her on. What's exciting about this one specifically is she just came out with a book, which is appropriately named Love Without Reason, The Lost Art of Giving a Fuck, where not only does she walk you through these, you know, great stories of being on Skid Row and the lessons she's learned, but really walks you through how we can all shift the way we love and how we can love by choice in all moments and all time, and how we can actually use our status, our privilege, who we are. And by status, I mean, we all have status. It doesn't matter who you are at different times of your life and how you can use where you are to help others. It's awesome talking to her. I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. Go run, get this book. It's incredible. It will start shifting how you operate minute to minute. I hope you enjoy the episode. This is so exciting. I mean,
this is crazy. You have it and you got the official one.
Oh yeah. I ordered early. I ordered that was like months and months and months and months ago. I'm so proud of you. Like so proud of you.
Thank you.
I mean, this is like legit. There's a lot of words in here. You did great.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, it's a 2-year process. I've been working on this book for probably a total of 2.5 years total.
I mean, it's amazing that I love that the name that you've been doing everything with Love Without Reason. I mean, it could not be a more perfect title. It's like whenever you downloaded that as, you know, Lunch on Me, Love Without Reason, because you've been talking about Love Without Reason forever. It's always feels like it totally embodies you, embodies everything you do. It's now embodies this book, but it's like, it's so perfect.
Yeah, I got a vision of it. It was kind of crazy. Like I definitely gotten a vision. I had just come back in town. I was in south of France and I'd seen it like clear as day. I don't know where I was driving. I was driving. I'd seen it. And I was like, that's literally the words I saw. I wrote it down. I was like, I don't know what this means, what this is, but I know it's this thing. Uh-huh. And so, yeah, it was definitely one of those downloads that was beyond me. I just listened to it. And now, yeah, it's been fitting in every way where it kind of like, I had the aha discovery as well. So I was like, oh my God, this is it. This is the words. I didn't know. I downloaded the words, but this is what it is. And it's been that like for me. So it's interesting how it's kind of coming full circle now.
So amazing. Well, anyway, I obviously loved reading this. It's like everything that's amazing about you and what you do. But I've always said this, what's so incredible about you is not only just this amazing work that you do, this undertaking that's constantly growing and changing and evolving. You're always finding ways to serve and shift and give people what they need, but you've always been a teacher. And that to me has always been what's so fascinating about you is like, yes, you do this, but you have such an incredible way of sharing what you do, how you do it and why you do it and inspiring others to join that I've always been like, that's why I always love talking to you about it. Cause I feel like you're one of the best teachers in this area as well. So it's like, not only are you inspiring change on the ground floor, you're also having the ripple effects because your words and how you convey it are so powerful. So this book to me is like perfection because it's exactly what you've been doing all the time. It's like you are this unbelievable teacher about how to love without reason, to love without limitation, to love without, you know, all of it. And I want to talk, we'll start by talking about that, but it's awesome. It's like, yes, if anybody should have a book, absolutely you should, because this is what you've been doing with your words. And now your words are just on paper.
Yeah. It's one of those, like, I feel like I'm a part of the experience. Like I say that because I never viewed myself as a teacher. I never seen any of those things. So when I hear that,
that's funny.
It's new news to me. I shared my life experiences and I'm blessed that, you know, some are teachable moments, but I had never even thought that far.
Oh my God, you have such an unbelievable way. And I beg anyone who's listening to this, we've done two previous episodes with Larea and all are just chock full of, again, teaching. So that's why I find it so interesting that you don't see yourself that way because you have an unbelievable knack of translating your life moments in teachable formats, which not everyone can do. You know what I mean? Not everybody knows how to pull from the situations what is teachable, what is learnable, what is going to connect. And you have that ability, which is what is so fun about this book. I mean, there's so much learning, but again, your stories bring it alive. Like every moment, every story, you're just like, oh my God. And there's so many great stories in there. It's phenomenal.
Thank you. It took me a while to dig because even deciding to write the book and deciding what the context would be, it was, oh my God, it was the posing questions that people ask, like, how did you get here to show up for life? You know? So it was this thing, I was like, you know what? I have to really go back in the archive and I have to think about what are all the things that got me here? What were those lessons? What were those defining moments? And I think that, you know, all of them were big. They were all used. But there were so many of them that were small, you know, there were things that I would have never even, I didn't realize, you know, it's like certain moments in your life that are monumental. You're very aware of the magnitude of it in the present moment. Then there's other things you look back in hindsight. And I think those moments, I was like, oh my God, look at all the love in those details.
Well, it's so funny. I don't know why this just jumped in my head because it's not exactly what you're saying, but that story about your grandfather, you know, dying, and he's in the hospital. And I get this. My family's very like this. My family's very big on no need to remember me this way. Don't worry about it. Like very strong. And he was very strong in the idea of like, nobody comes to visit me in the hospital. Like this is like, And you broke that promise. And I love it. And the reason I don't know why that popped in my head is the idea of like, you and your best friend went and got pizza and you made it super casual and super fun. And even though he was super gruff about it and annoyed in the beginning, it ended up being great.
Yeah.
And it was like such a moment that you seem to realize of such love in such a small way that he probably really needed, whether he knew it or not.
Yeah. I think the most interesting part was the really defining moment for me was I didn't go to his funeral. And my father called me upset. He was like, you're not going to the funeral. You're not sending flowers. And I said, I brought him flowers and he smelled them before he left.
Yeah.
And that was a moment where I said to him, I said, in this moment, the funeral was for the people who didn't show up, let them grieve. I said goodbye to him.
Oh my God.
And I was 22, 23 years old. And I had to tell my father there's no need because I showed up and I was the last person to see him alive. Oof. And that's when I realized like that moment, even translating that to my father, you know, because after he passed away, he went and cleaned his home. He did the things that he never got to see.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I stormed in a hospital room, he unannounced, and snuck him pizza and told him I would sit with him. And I brought him flowers. And yeah, I think that is when you can, I think it's so important to to have that, to find the details and to be so intentional and to make sure that we're being attentive to not what's asked, but what's unasked.
Well, that's huge. I feel like that's a gift. How can you train people to do that? Because I don't think everyone has that ability to see behind, you know, or between the lines or intuit, you know, a lot of it.
100%.
What does someone really want? Because that would be the day old argument. Well, that's not what they want, but they do want this. Well, how do you know? Yeah. They didn't say it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Is there any like words of wisdom around that?
Yeah, I think that obviously we start with things that we want. As time goes on, we learn to love people how they want to be loved. But you have to start somewhere. And I think that you start with giving what you want to receive. I think that is the starting point. And I think that as you get comfortable, because I think that there's also has to be this space where giving and showing up becomes innate. So when you do it in the beginning, you don't start by expecting to master it. It's like anything else. Everything requires a discipline and practice. And that's what I learned too, is the difference is when you said someone will mentally stop themselves, you know, there's this reframing that has to happen. They won't want that, but we don't know unless we try. So it's like, it's really more of a dismantling of the defenses and the things that keeps us from acting.
But that's huge. So, I mean, really it goes back to working on yourself because, you know, you do have a whole chapter in there about how you learn to love how you see it. And so you have to dismantle that first. I mean, yours was a little like traumatic, actually, what you defined as love. And because for you, love almost was violence.
Oh yeah, 100%. Or it was confusion. Like I think it was confusing because what you hear love is in the environment of family and comfort. It is a lot of dismantling and thinking for yourself. I think that I learned that, I mean, 5-6 years old. Even if I couldn't even articulate, but I knew energetically. And I think spiritually we all know, especially being young beings, when we're more spirit than we are human. Mm-hmm. I think that you don't need the words because you're aware of the energy.
Right.
Children are hypersensitive. And I think that was the gift. Like I look at it as like, it was traumatic, but it was a gift because I believe God uses everything and it was all used. Right. And I think that being hypersensitive was developed through that because I understood feelings. I understood even just anger and violence and rage before it even happened, I could energetically feel it transpiring. Just the same with love and empathy. I could feel those things. I was attuned to that energy. And it made me decide. We decide that. I think that very young, I recognize the energy we hold in spaces. And being an introvert through my experiences, I was so self-aware of what was going on. But I was like, wow, like this person is bringing this energy in the environment. This person is lifting the energy. This person is transmuting the energy. I watched it. I witnessed it. And I allowed that to help me decide, well, what do I want to be? And I learned that very young because I said, oh, my grandmother, I want to be like her.
Yeah. And just so people know, because, and we've talked about it on previous podcasts and it's in the book, Larea grew up a lot with your grandmother because you'd bounce back and forth because your mom was a little volatile, just with her own life, as well as sometimes it was not the best environment for a kid. Mm-hmm. So you saw it all. You saw that stuff through your mom. And then you also call your grandmother mom.
My grandmommy.
Yeah. Yes. And so and I know she was really like the strong mother figure for you in that sense.
For sure.
She's the one who taught you true love. I mean, right. You always kind of bring up that Mother Teresa quote and you always relate it to your grandmother. It seems like your grandmother
is the one
who really showed you that you just keep loving no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that every answer she had always returned to love. Every answer. And I'm just like everything.
Give us an example. Give me a fun example.
I mean, especially as I became a teenager, you know, I became boisterous and very, and I would articulate my disdain for, you know, the position of people in our life and family. And I just didn't understand it because I'm like, wait, but why aren't they showing up in this? And my grandmother, like one of the most, okay, this is the last thing she said to me, and I'll never forget this. She never told me what to do. What I loved about her was she was quiet and her example was her teaching. That was it. She never told, not once in my life, she suggested or told me what to do ever. Even as a child, she let me be. But the last conversation I had with her, she called me And I was holding a grudge with family for not showing up for her. And she showed up for everyone. So to prove my loyalty, I was like, Grandma, I'll never talk to them again. They're not kind to you. They can't treat you this way. You know, and in a coin, her love was bigger than I understood, because in those moments, she had radical acceptance. So for me, it was like, no, we have to make a stance, because I thought it was weighing on her self-love. Because I'm like, no, people have to treat you. And she looked at, or she didn't look at me. She was on the phone with me, and she said, hey, she said, she's like, I'm going to tell you this. And I'm going to tell you this one thing in life. She said, forgive everyone. And I looked, she said, you're going to forgive them for not showing up. She was like, forgive everyone. And I was like, how do you forgive people when they've hurt you and you've been nothing but kind? She said, because it's not about them. It's your assignment with God. And your assignment with God is to forgive everything that God created. That is your only position, and it's not for them. And so you can walk this world light. You have to walk this world light. And that...
walking through the world light, I love. But what a lesson, because I think if we could all figure out that stuff isn't about the other person ever... Mm-hmm. And look, it sounds very narcissistic sometimes, but it's so true. It's like the forgiveness and not holding the grudge. It's like, God, your grandmother was wise.
Yeah. And when she said it to me, it was the first time I understood that it was bigger than where I was sitting. I wasn't sitting big enough, because she was like, no, like, I don't need you to prove, like, your love. I don't need you to prove it to me.
You were choosing small.
Yeah. I was choosing, like, I'm just going to be there for you because you're such a kind person. And then she said to me, no, you will forgive everyone. And then when she said that, it was the first time she put such an emphasis. I was like, whatever this means, I'm going to figure it out. Whatever this means, I'm going to figure it out.
Did you know she was passing away soon? Like, was that conversation?
Mm-mm. I had no idea, but she just called me and said that to me. That was her last, like, real conversation she said to me. And the one before that, I was like, I finally get you. And she said, if I made an imprint on one person's life, you know, that's enough. But I had no idea. So when she said that, I was like, dang, she's never told me what to do. I better listen this time.
Well, yeah, she saved it. I know it's so interesting. The one thing we'd never talked about, I think we hadn't talked about, I feel like I would have remembered it, or maybe not. And when you talk about kind of the micro moments that have affected, like, you learning how to love, was the difference of how your grandmother accepted you versus your mom. And I don't think I knew the story of... when your mom found out you had a girlfriend, your mom basically threw you. And I mean, obviously it was, had her own issues to deal with of acceptance, and they were taken out on you. I don't think I ever knew that. I feel like we've talked so much about so many things. So it's so interesting. When I read that, I was like, oh my God, that's huge. And the first reaction I had was, is that, do you think, part of your DNA of just such radical acceptance of everyone? I feel like you accept everyone, and that's one of your beautiful qualities.
I think that what I learned is so funny. I think one of my closest friends said to me yesterday, she's like, you're the first person I met that's a hurt person that doesn't hurt people.
Right.
And I think that it was weird. I never thought about that. She's like, hurt people hurt people. She's like, even me, I've been a hurtful person because I've been hurt. She's like, but you don't hurt people. And I thought about that, because even growing up and accepting those things and accepting, you know, being abused and those things, I didn't want to participate. Like, I didn't, that was my, that didn't feel right to me. Even if I was like the victim, I couldn't muster up the strength to be that, because that to me was, seeing that energy was worse than what I was encountering. I think that it couldn't break me. It hurt and it was painful, but it couldn't break me, because I couldn't match that. I felt like, and I left as a teenager, I felt like the moment I felt that I was even going to be influenced, I left. I couldn't.
You always just had this wisdom, though. I mean,
yeah.
Do you think it came from? Do you think it was innate? Or do you believe in past lives?
Past lives, for sure. I believe I've been here, of course. Like, I knew that very young. I knew in my environment how much karma was there. Like, I could see it, like, energetically. And yes, I was very aware as a child. I was a child and I was aware that I would raise my parents. I knew that.
When do you feel like that thought, like, first, that awareness came into your head first?
7, 8 years old. 7, 8 years old when I was, 7, 8 years old, because, you know, there was moments, I mean, especially in abuse, especially if you're a child, you become an emotional punching bag. And you know that. You see that energy. You see that, like, that energy is taken out on you and the person shifts. They're lighter because they dumped it on you. And I think that a lot of people in abuse know that and they become that. And that's when I first started realizing it, because I was like, oh, like, this is the things that I was encountering. And I also realized in those moments, like, yeah, I don't want to be this way. And I don't understand it. Like, I remember being like, I don't understand why someone would choose this. And I think that was the difference, is for some reason, even as a child, I always thought how people were showing up was a choice. I thought they chose that. So I definitely knew that. Like, I was like, you're choosing abuse. You're choosing this. You're choosing love. Like, I just thought that,
oh my God, do you know how many years of therapy it takes for people to understand that that stuff is a choice?
Well, I mean, I've never been in therapy, but in my life, but I think that, you know, I allowed life to be my therapist, but, and God, and kind of staying in a certain space. But no, I knew that that was a choice young. So I realized, like, even whether it was being loved or unloved, everyone decided to choose how they showed up. I didn't need to know why that's where they sat. And that's the radical acceptance too. I accepted that. I accepted who people would be in my life. I accepted that my grandmother was my mother because it's about our actions. And she became my mother because she acted like a mother.
Yeah. How was it? Your mom is, your birth mom has passed too, correct?
No. My birth mom's still living.
Oh, she is. All right, how's your relationship now?
We haven't spoken years.
Okay. So maybe that's why I thought.
Yeah. No, the last real interaction with her was when my grandmother was passing.
That's, and for you, when you talk about your radical acceptance, how do you view her as far as in this universe and in relation to you?
Sad, broken, and stuck. Mm. I feel she's, I think that it's many people when they get in their own way, and they just pile pain on top of each other and never deal with the core. I mean, it's just bearing unnecessary weight. You know, she's heavy. Yeah. She's so heavy energetically, emotionally. And I feel sad for her, because if we don't choose to transmute that, we sit in a heavy space.
I know, it's so awful.
Yeah, I feel bad because I don't live that way.
Right. Do you have any siblings from her?
Yeah, I'm the oldest of 8 kids.
That's right. I knew there were a lot, but I didn't remember if they all came from, because I knew she had so many.
I have siblings with her. She's had 6 kids. So I'm close to my siblings. I'm close to all my siblings.
Are any of them close to her?
Maybe the younger ones, but I don't know. I definitely see it's not. No, I think their dynamic is very, and I don't know. I'm from a distance, you know. Yeah. My relationship with them is them, you know. It's like I definitely feel maternally for them. Like, I feel like I don't see them as siblings. I see them as my babies, like ducks. Well,
everyone's,
you know,
your baby in life. You're everyone's mom. I mean, that's just your role, literally.
Yeah,
you're my mom. I mean, come on. It's
like... Yeah, I definitely feel that, you know, that energy with them. And I like I said, I love my siblings. I will, you know, I will see them this weekend for the book launch. So it's very interesting to see the environment we grew up in and the energies that have been produced from it, you know, because they're very, very gentle beings. Like, it's very interesting.
Oh, that's that is interesting.
Mm-hmm. I'm the least gentle out of them.
Well, but you were first. Yeah. That's interesting. And You had a lot of shit you had to get done.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, if you're, I mean, you came in very wise. So if you're that wise and you're put into that environment, you're not going to be gentle.
Yeah. No, yeah, of course. And I think that, again, like the things that are, the experience I had, they were developing me and they were happening to me. Like I needed all those lessons, as difficult as they were. And, you know, I love to create a new world or a new idea of my experiences, but I've used all of them and I can honor them because I do believe it happens for our good. You know, I don't think that it was in vain. I definitely think that the fact that I survived it, there's light in that, you know, there's so much light that can be shared in that wisdom and that experience.
It's so interesting. Like, you know, you have so much to teach about loving radically, about, you know, love without reason, and what you do every day and working with Skid Row. Do you feel like part of the motivation of writing this book was noticing, like when you're in it and you see it, and we've talked about this a bunch, just noticing how other people choose to love? Has that been surprising for you, just looking around in the world and noticing how people choose to love?
I think what's been more shocking is that people don't realize it's a choice. Mm. I think that there's very small things that we can reframe and fine tune that change everything. I think that we treat love like it's accidental. You know, it's written about more than any other subject, and we treat it like Cupid's bow. You know, a lightning bolt strikes, like it's accidental instead of intentional. And I think that those are the reframing moments that I feel that if we worked on those things, like I always tell people these two posing questions: what has love been to you? Because everyone has a unique experience. What has it been to you? And what is your definition? 9 times out of 10, most people have completely contrasting things. So it's, okay, love has been this, and usually we're a product of that experience, but you kind of have to stop, separate the idea of what it's been to you and lean on what you want it to be.
Right.
And when you lean on what you want it to be, then you start creating the blueprint and roadmap to walking in that space. And that's when it's not accidental, but it's intentional. And you decide to allow love to be something that you take in an assertive way and don't allow it to be passive.
You know, talk a little bit more about that, because it is true. It's like we have, part of it's the fairy tales we were raised with. It's like we have this idea that like you fall into love. I mean, literally, mm-hmm. It's like you fall into love, or it finds you, or it hits you. And it's something so unique and special and random. And you'll only attain it maybe so many times in your lifetime if.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit more about like your definition of love.
Well, yeah, I always say, like, especially when it comes to falling in love, I feel like there's two things. One, I always say, I don't want to fall in love. I want to rise in it. Mm. So to me, that's also, I rise in love. And I think that that's also an empowering space. That's why I don't think it's accidental. Like the love in my life has been so intentional. And because I've been intentional, I have curated love that I want it to be by being it. And I think that is also such a minor thing that will empower and change so many of us, because we always look at our experience of love and we try and piece together, like, what does that mean? And it's like, no. You don't have to use what it's been as your reference, as it being the quintessential love to you. You can separate those things. They need to be compartmentalized. There needs to be this idea. Love without reason, to me, that's what it is, because I'm choosing to rise in love. And every time I think about love without reason, I don't think about falling in love. I think about rising in it, because it's an empowering place to be in. And that to me is to be empowered by love, not defeated, not minimized by it. That reframing allows you to show up different because you're already changing your position within love. Not the heartbreaks, not the disappointments, not the family dynamics, but what do you want love to be? Be that. And encounter that, because it's like to encounter love, you have to encounter another person. So be that loving encounter.
And what do you feel like, because I mean, one of the things you talk about early in the book is kind of these limitations that people put on their love. And it's like, it's one of the things that hit me. I'm like, oh God, we do. We all have so many limitations, whatever it is, whether it's self-imposed, imposed by environment, imposed by, you know, group thinking. I don't know, but it's so interesting. And this idea, you know, I love these stories that you told from, you know, being in, like, you were like for 2 weeks, was it 2 weeks? You actually were like, I'm going to live as they do.
No, 43 days. 43 days. Six weeks.
A lot longer. yeah. So it was 6 weeks, and you were, and I love the story that you were there. Maybe you were only there for 2 weeks at this point, and you thought about everything, but not about like the weather, and it was about to like start pouring. And I will say in LA, it never rains, but when it does, it's big. And no one's prepared for it. Like the streets aren't prepared for it. I mean, it's, so it always feels like everything's going to like, yes, it's crazy. It's like a deluge. And so you were asking like your friends, and I think you were next to Miss Brenda, who I know comes up a lot. And she was like, yeah, you got to get a tarp. Like, cause you can't get into a shelter, or, like get a tarp. Yeah. So you're like, okay, I'm going to like pedal money and like, you know, panhandle and get some money so I can buy a tarp. They're not crazy expensive. And so you had that experience of sitting there and asking for money. And what was so fascinating about it is you thought it was going to be a lot easier than it was. A, yeah. You actually thought you were going to make that money.
Yeah.
And then B, you said, and it was so interesting the way it happened, is like, you were already so dejected by the time any coins like hit your cup. It wasn't even like early in the day. By the time it happened, you'd already started to kind of, I guess, transform emotionally more into your neighbors now that were on the street, because you actually were feeling what it meant to be ignored or to be, which is a huge thing you and I've talked about. And again, I really beg people to go back to that first episode, because we talk a lot about, for the homeless, how the biggest thing is feeling ignored and not human and not actually being present. That to them is way more prevalent than not having a roof over their head. Like, that's not the issue for them. The issue is disappearing as like a human being. And so it seems like in this instance that you're sitting there all day getting ignored, like you started to actually kind of embody it and they could see it. And so then by the end of the day, only two people had put money in your cup, and both had been homeless, are homeless themselves.
Yeah. I was that experience. I was so rattled. Yeah. And the reason why is I gave humanity a softer pass. I thought we were further than we were.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I thought that my first mindset was, and it was coming also from my space, if a person is humble enough to bear their vulnerability of not having, like, to me, it's like, you know, humility is a problem within a lot of people. And you would just naturally think from human to human, if someone was able to come to you with humility and vulnerability to bear what they need, and that if we could meet their need, we would. Just off of that reason. And to see people were so far removed from humanity, humility, vulnerability, because it doesn't get more vulnerable than being homeless on so many different levels. And for someone to be kind enough, not stealing from you, deceiving you, but just literally asking for help, and you can help. And you decide to put your hand in your pocket and not reach out, we have a bigger issue. And that's what I realized from a collective dealing with about 600 people that day. We have a bigger issue. And a giving an F problem, it was never so stark than that moment, because I'm not in that space, but I don't represent the majority either. And it doesn't matter if a few of us get it, we all have to get it. And to see how far we were, that's when I realized how much work needed to truly be done, because I bared my soul. I was, you know, and I, you know, there's all the boxes I crossed off. Humility, I'm not suffering from mental illness. You know, I am considered normalized by, you know, society standard. You know, there was no reason for us to reject each other in that way. And for us to get to that space, it's devastating spiritually. That's a devastating space for us to be in as a collective.
And I mean, that to me is why this book is so important, because it's a good reminder. I mean, look, it's funny. You just, that first episode we ever did together, and I've said this to you so many times, I texted to you all the time, like really opened my eyes in a different way, because to me it was that, the ignoring that people do, and the stories that whether they've been told, and like that, you know, why you don't give money to the homeless, blah, blah, blah. It's funny when you say it this way, I would think for people to hear, I mean, I've talked to you about this before, so I've had this mental shift, but when you talk about like, I don't get it, being homeless, there's no more humility than that in asking for help. I don't think most people see it that way.
Yeah. And that's the problem, right? That's the problem, because we are not identifying people's vulnerability, their humility. And that should automatically change us. And I think the reason that's important is most people deem themselves as good people. But is that idealistic? Is that just an idea? Where is the good coming from? Yeah. Where's the good going?
What's the perception? What's the action?
Like, so it's like, you can't just say you're good. You can't speak in a kind tone. And I believe you. It's not what you say, it's what you do. And I saw a lot of people not cross the box of what goodness and humanity should look like. And I was devastated. I was devastated because to speak to 600 people that day, I had to at least 500-600 people. I'm in the financial district. Like, there's no, you know, in my mind, it's like, this is a good area, middle to upper class, downtown Los Angeles, working class. I'm in, you know, a tourist area. Like, I'm like, someone's going to help me. Someone's going to be kind. There's no, and in my mind, I had that much faith and that much optimism. And the people, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, did anyone even offer you anything else? Like,
no one. Everyone had an excuse. Everyone said the exact same thing. How do you have 600 people say, I don't have cash, I can't help right now, I gotta go? Like, no, I mean, ignored me, moved out the way just because I was asking. Like, you felt so, and I've bared rejection in life. It's not like I've been rejected in so many ways. That level of rejection was so painful because it's a cry out for help that no one even, it's like no one cared. Like, how can we be good and not have empathy towards each other? And, you know, after that, I mean, I've done studies on empathy and I talk about these things in the book, and it's on such a decline. We have to look at, how is that taxing our soul? Like, how, you know, there has to be a direct correlation to the amount of anxiety people feel and empathy being on a decline, and the idea of anxiety being connected to not feeling loved and cared for collectively.
Yeah.
Like, there has to be a spiritual correlation to that. And I felt it, and I experienced it in that moment, how far we got to the point where we no longer, like, we're so desensitized to someone, and it was an easy, solvable thing. I wasn't asking for it. I was asking for $24 within an 8-hour day of begging people for help. A dollar here. You know what I mean? Like, I was asking for that. Everyone said, I've never seen that. Like, everyone had said no. And the people gave to me because they knew that rejection. They gave me what was in their little wallets and pockets. Like, they gave me everything they had.
And that's so crazy. That
was so painful to see the people who have the most give the least. But then you sit in a space that you, with pride, say you're a good person. All these people, I'm sure, had these ideas that they were great humans. But the moments where they could be great, they were overlooking, or they were too busy to be great.
It's so interesting too. I always say the people with the most money get the most free stuff. At least it used to work that way. I know now there's like influencer stuff, but in the past it used to be like, the higher up you are in the corporation, the more free shit just came your way. You know, I was like, they can afford it. I was like, send it to me. The assistant was no money. I was like, I was the one who needs the free stuff. But it's so true. You know, you talk about in the book also, which the idea of there's more separateness happening in the world. And I mean, do you feel like that's part of this problem?
Oh, 100%. It's not in our nature. And I mean, especially, there was already separation that was happening through online, right? And there's beauty that comes from online and social media and connectedness. But I think it's creating bubbles.
I agree.
I think that there are bubbles that are happening and we're being fed the same. And Agreed. That's also, you know, and we're only interested in seeing the same. But so I think that we're just being fed kind of the same thing, and it's not allowing us to expand.
I couldn't agree more. I say it all the time on here, like politically, it's like every time I have to go on Facebook and people are like, I just did a clean sweep of everyone who basically, whatever your opinion is, has the opposite opinion. You know, it's like, I did a clean sweep of everyone who is a Trump supporter. I did a clean sweep of everyone who is a Biden supporter, whatever, because I can't handle like, and so then anytime I got into discussions with people politically, people's response would be like, oh my God, just block them. And I'm like, no, I refuse. I was like, I refuse, because exactly what you said. I'm like, I don't get it. I'm okay hearing other people have a different point of view as me. I learn from them. Hopefully they learn from me. Like, I want to know what's out there. Like, it doesn't help me at all to get into a little bubble of my same thought, because my thought should hopefully be evolving and changing all the time anyway. And I don't know what direction that's going to go in or why. And so I was like, I'd rather have discussions with people or what are perceived arguments and not eliminate them. I've never taken anyone off of my social media. It's more Facebook. I find Instagram to be so insular. Like, the bubbles
are absolutely
strong, like really strong on Instagram. Yeah. It's like everyone thinks, looks exactly alike in their little bubbles. Facebook, I feel like because it started longer ago, you still have remnants of people who might have had different thought process.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Generationally, everyone's on there. Yeah.
So I feel like on Facebook, I feel it more, and I've never once blocked someone, gotten rid of someone. I mean, I'm sure maybe someone did it to me, who knows, but I refuse, because I'm like, that's not the world. And I'm with you. I think it's so scary when this world becomes these ideas of it can only be your thought around you.
Absolutely. It does. It's a dangerous place to be. And I think that we have to seek common ground and find ways to connect and not focus on our separateness. I think that we can get to places where we seek common ground. I think certain things are non-negotiable, like oppressing others and things like that that are hurtful. I have non-negotiables for. I don't think that there's common ground in oppression, but in other opinions and things that don't affect people outside of you, then yes, common ground all day long. But that's important for us to see that's what we need to work on. Because a lot of times, even with social media, what you see is people using it to vent their disdain, but not to find ways to connect or healthy debates, healthy conversations. Right. I think that's great. Like, I love challenging, debating conversations. Those are my favorite, because I do think that we will find common grounds every time if we allow that and to be open to it. And it's a gift, you know? I mean, I work with our street fam, which, you know, are people experiencing homelessness and foster youth. And we're, you know, I live separate lives, but the expansion I've had from being so exposed to things outside of my experience and bubble, those gifts, they have bettered me as a human being, have made me way more well-rounded and accepting, because I'm allowing deep understanding to happen. And also allowing ourselves to be educated on things we don't know. Like, you can find excitement in that space, you know? You want to steepen. You want to grow. And I think that we have to realize expansion comes from expanding our areas, our environments, you know? We stick with people, whether it's cultural, race, economical. That's not, like, I feel like that can't be what ties us together.
Yeah. That's actually, it's heavy if you think about it. I'm like, it's a lot to dismantle, because I do feel like the world's getting more siphoned that way. And it's scary. It's really scary. You know, you talk a lot about kind of using your privilege. It was interesting. You didn't say white privilege. You just said privilege, you know, knowing the top. And you were talking about how, you know, people don't use their privilege. It's like, use it. If you have it, use it. And it's, do you feel like there's something getting tied up now in the idea of people being ashamed of privilege and so therefore aren't even taking advantage of what they could be doing with it?
I think that we have to know the position we have in life. Like, I might not have white privilege, but I have the privilege of being maintained in life that someone experiencing homelessness might not have, right? Where I can go into a place and not be othered the same way just off of the means of a shower. I think that we do have to look at levels of it, you know, not everyone's a trust fund kid. Not everyone's an heiress. Like, there's levels of it. I think that, of course, there's things that are toxic and dangerous within those spaces, but there's also a place where our voice can empower others. And I think that what's important is when you're in a position of privilege, whatever that is, wherever your level is, I'm working with my level. It's not that high, but I'm just working in that space, you know, but being in that space, having the story, when I talk about the kids at the coffee shop, the privilege that I was accepted into order because I had the money to do so, it's something as small as a coffee shop. And someone unempowered, to me, the privilege that I had the right and authority in that space to speak up for them and change what was happening in the experience. That's how you use your privilege for good.
Now talk to me now. So I'll tell people what it's about because I wrote that quote down because I loved it so much. But basically two homeless boys, I'm guessing, went into.
Yeah, I think they were foster kids, like they weren't taken care of at all.
And they were just going to Starbucks asking for a glass of water. And the guy just.
It wasn't Starbucks though. It was a small like shop downtown. I just want to make sure because I'm like, sorry. Starbucks, you guys. No, it's okay. I just want to make sure it was a coffee shop.
Just a coffee shop. And the guy totally dismissed them. And basically was like,
humiliated them.
Yeah. You have to be a customer. You have to be a paying customer basically to have water. Correct. And like, get out.
And it was so awful because it's a small shop. Everyone could hear. And when someone's doing, again, it was back to that humility. Someone's burying themselves. The need can be met and it's obvious that the person is in need.
Yes,
and if someone can be that kind to say, please, may I have? Like, again, I experienced that on a macro level and that was micro. That was one small moment, but that was exactly what I experienced. And I had that experience before I had went out. And that experience was hard because I'm sure the barista wasn't a bad person, but I felt that can be connected to so many things, being unempowered, maybe mistreated that day, but what has to be recognized. It's like, I understand it, but I don't accept it. I understand you might have had a bad day. I understand, but I can't accept
this behavior.
Because it's our responsibility to look at what's in front of us, to be mindful and intentional, and to recognize that. That's what we have to train. That was the whole idea of becoming better and actually stepping into being good people. It has to do with those moments where you can help someone.
You can choose love in that moment.
Yeah. And it's something so small. I think that's the hardest part is what you realize is there's so many small things we could be doing for each other that we're not doing and we're suffering from it.
Well, that's the micro gestures, which you know is always my favorite conversation.
Yeah.
Let me read this quote first before we move to that because it's so good. So basically she kind of railed into the barista, deservedly so, putting him in his place, which was amazing, and got them their water and then said to the boys, don't be afraid to ask for what you want. You may not always get it, but closed mouths never get fed. I just thought that was brilliant. And it's so true. It's like you may not always get the food or the drink of water when you ask for it, but you're certainly not going to get it if you don't. And like, I loved it because you were also giving them that support of like, you did the right thing. Like asking was not the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that was the most important part was it. I thought of things. I needed him to understand perspective, which I know he'll never do that again. And then I know that I know he won't. And then I wanted those boys to recognize, to walk with your head up. And and I think all of us, validation is important for all of us. I understand that we can become superhuman and we don't need it. And we find ways to find it within ourselves, but it is nice to feel loved, seen, understood, and celebrated. And in that moment, I wanted those boys to know, no, you have to continue to do this. And thank God I felt blessed to be there to intervene. Like I felt so blessed to be there because I changed that entire dynamic and that needed to happen. And I know that that was a teachable moment. I know it was monumental for both of them. And so I felt thankful that I was even aware enough to not just be in my bubble, but be aware of the people around me that I could show up for someone else. Never see those boys again in my life. But knowing in that moment was the only important thing. And that was a moment where I got to be loving and I got to use my privilege and my voice and the privilege of just something as simple as being able to buy coffee and offering them. I asked the sweetest part was I asked the boys, are you guys hungry? Do you want anything? And they were like, we just needed water. It wasn't even asking for anything else.
And water was free. Mm-hmm. But I think going back to the privilege conversation, it is so important to realize we all have some sort of privilege somewhere.
Absolutely.
And so I love your point of be aware what it is. And it is, look, I feel like what's going on in society right now, it's tough. It's like everyone against everyone at all times. Yeah. So I think it puts people into a big defensive stance, which therefore works against this idea of getting into the proactive love stance. Because I feel like people are so, no matter who or what you are, I feel like everyone's kind of ready to be attacked. And so—
Absolutely.
They're curling up more than kind of being there to be present. And I do think this is such a beautiful reminder for all of us who are defensive at different moments for different reasons, whatever the conversations are. If you can just remember, you do hold privilege, all of us, at some point, and be mindful of where your privilege sits and what situation you're in, because you can use it to help. And I think that's a beautiful statement.
Yeah, just speaking up for people, advocating for someone, you know, it's just like, again, it's not turning a blind eye, saying that, like, I'm going to look, and certain things hurt. They're very hurtful, but being hurt, you can't be empowered if you're just sitting in pain. You have to say, no, I can do something about this. I can turn this around. I can advocate for people. And it's not big. Does it need to be something big? It can be daily.
But that's like, for me, it's funny. And I love it. I love that I made the book with the micro gestures, because I do talk about them all the time, and I'm obsessed. Yes. And thank you. It was like such an honor when I was reading. I was like, But in the quote they use in the micro gestures part of mine, I think is right, which is you talk about them as micro gestures. And then the minute you start doing them and they become part of your life, you realize that it's not micro at all. It's completely macro, and it's everything. And I feel like that's what's so interesting. And, you know, like LaRaysia really got to me in that first thing, and it changed how I interacted, especially with anyone who was homeless, and looking at them as a human being and seeing their humility and knowing that they all just need something that I can give. And, you know, interestingly, and later in the book, it talks a lot about how my daughter and I, especially in LA, would always, you know, whenever we would see anyone, it just got to the point I would always stop and ask. And so, for instance, what I learned from you, if I had seen you on that street, if I didn't have cash, which chances are I wouldn't, because I never do, I'm horrible with cash, I probably would have been like, what else can I get you? Like, is there a store? Can we go walk to a store? Or I would have had something on me, because I learned that from you. This idea of talk and ask the questions. And that for me was so huge, this micro gesture of just not even take kind of what you did with your grandfather. It's like not even taking the no, knowing there's a need, and just like wiping the table clean enough where they know it's okay to have a need. And if I can provide this, I'm going to help you. Yeah. And I have fed the amount of people since I spoke to you that got fed is all because of you, because I never walked by anybody without insisting of some sort, even if it took time out of my day to go. I mean, the amount of restaurants I had to sit and wait for food to get ready because someone had some crazy order, and I would just be like, well, I'm getting this person lunch. And I would sit there for 25 minutes waiting for the tacos to get ready or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But it changed everything because of you. And it was so true. And yes, in a moment, that was my privilege. I had the privilege of being able to walk into any store. I had the ability with a credit card, because chances are I did not have cash, to purchase a lunch and a drink and a napkin and coffee or whatever it was for somebody whenever they needed it. And I think, I hope people hear this and hope and realize that we do all have privilege that can be used. And your comment about love is a choice in every moment, I think is huge. And I think if people realize it's not just one thing or another. So if someone's out there asking for a tarp, and if you don't have a tarp on you, it doesn't mean you can't stop. If you know that person probably needs more than a tarp, to stop and ask, well, what else can I do for you? This is what I can do. Does any of this resonate? You know, I feel like one thing you taught me and you talk about in this book is mistakes. It's okay to make mistakes. And I think, again, going back to society and a culture, we're not very forgiving of people right now in a very, very vocal way. And so I think people are terrified. People are terrified to say the wrong thing. They're terrified to insult someone the wrong way. They're terrified. And I get that. I'm like that sometimes too. I totally understand it. You're so nervous that you're just by sometimes not knowing something, you're going to say something so offensive, and then everything's going to, but you taught me this, and it changed my relationship, like I said, especially with anyone who is homeless, this idea of there's no mistakes. Like, it's just a conversation.
Yeah.
And I mean, look, yeah. I've been told no before. I got out of my car once. You know how they are, like, a lot of times people are waiting at the intersections.
Yeah.
And so you've got like a small amount of window of time because the light's yeah. going to change and there's a line of people getting off the freeway behind you.
Yeah.
And because of you, I always had water in the back of my trunk and I always had granola bars or something they could eat. And there was a new guy, actually. It was always the same person, but that person wasn't there. There was a new guy sitting in the corner. So I immediately, because it's quick, I immediately got out. And I remember it was during COVID times too. And I didn't give a shit. Like, I got out. I'm like, hi, I have water. I have a bar. I have this, have as many as. And he was just like, not having it. He didn't want anything yeah. but money. And I was like, are you sure? He was like, nope. And like, kind of pissed at me. But because yeah. of you, there was no reaction on my part. I was just like, okay, well, I'm so sorry. I actually don't have that right now. But are you sure? Like, you sure you just don't want a water? You sure you don't want this? No, I'm like, okay, have a beautiful day. I'll see you soon. Like, and that was big for me. I remember that moment because I would think if that happened 2 years prior, I'd probably be like, are you fucking kidding? Like, I would have been almost annoyed. I mean, that's the honest mm-hmm. reaction from me. Yeah. And I might've been more like, wait, here I am trying to help and you don't want my help. This was such a different perspective and different energetic exchange where it was like, that's not what he mm-hmm. wants. And like, I'm doing my best. I'm doing what I can do. I can't unfortunately give him what he wants. And you know what? I still ended being like, have a beautiful day. He was annoyed at me, but I kept it. Like, I was like, well, at least let me give him the emotion. I kept looking in his eyes. Like, I'm hearing you, like in my head, like they're human, like make them feel seen. I was like looking right at him. I'm like, are you sure? Okay. I'm so sorry. Have a beautiful yeah. day.
No, but that happened because your good experiences outweighed the bad.
Yes.
And that's because you had a Rolodex of examples of all the times. So that one moment wasn't defining it because you didn't try once.
That's true.
And that's the big difference is when you have those moments, they're so far in between, which I'm pretty sure you've seen that you're like, so many people are ready for this kind of love that if someone isn't, we caught them on the wrong day. That's okay.
Right.
And that's the acceptance because again, if you weren't doing this constantly, and your example was only once, and that's a tough space to be in if you've only tried once and that's the reaction you get opposed to all the wonderful moments that you had that you brought into your life. Like, you curated moments of love and beautiful exchanges.
You know what? It's the reason I brought that story up is because I think, and you're saying it so perfectly, it's just so important for people to know that that is not the norm. Does it happen? Of course it happens, mm-hmm. but it's not the norm, and don't let it, like, to me, that goes also along with the mistakes. Like, it's okay if you've, like, in that moment, I'm sure he was offended or pissed at me for whatever his reasoning was. And I didn't let it stop me from continuing to offer whatever I could. And I didn't let it stop me from the next time I saw anyone. Him, by the way, I think he, this was actually a nice addendum to it or ending. I remember same intersection because I was always going there to see friend. It was the same intersection. And he was there again. And I was like, I think this time I rolled down my window to be like, hey, I've got food and water. Would you like anything? And he was like, I could see it. You could tell like there was a hardening. And then he went, sure, I'll take a water. I'm like, great. And like, I get up and I go to get the water and I'm like, are you sure you don't want it? And once again, I showed him, I have this. He was like, okay. Like, he totally softened and then took everything. And then the light changed. I'm like, have a beautiful day. I'll see you. And it was the same person. And I could see the reluctance in the beginning.
And he recognized you. I'm telling you, they always know.
Oh, really?
Like, they always do because it's so rare to even have those encounters. He knew. And that's the thing too, is I think that people don't realize because that happens a lot when I go to Skid Row, if I'm rejected, I still work on the same people. I get through it to every single one of them, but it's also, that was a consistent moment. You showed up trying to help him one other time. And, you know, he had hardened himself maybe because no one had done that and it was foreign and he didn't want to feel, sometimes you don't want to feel dependent, vulnerable. Think about it. People in our regular lives that aren't even having these day-to-day struggles get to this mental reframing of, I don't want to get used to something too much like love and other things because I don't want to be dependent on it. Right. So, you know, we use this like weird way to like guard ourselves as a form of empowerment. And we're just like, you know, like I can do this myself. And then, so in that moment, what broke through was, oh my God, like she cares. She's consistent. Like you showed him love in both interact. You didn't meet him where he was at. So you made him rise. Like that was the energy. Like you took him to that place. where he felt safe, you know, where he was like, okay, maybe I can have something nice today.
And it was funny. I felt very lucky because he had changed. The person who was there the weeks prior always took. So when he came in, I was like, oh, and I remember being like I said, open, but being like, oh God, I hope that other person went somewhere where he's still getting stuff. You know what I mean? Cause mm-hmm. clearly like somehow the shift changed. I don't know how that works. I don't know if there's like a philosophy behind it or, but so when this new guy came on, I was so happy when he accepted it because everyone can use water. I mean, we all know that. So like the complete rejection of water, I was like, you're the one who taught me that. You're like water. Yeah. They need water more than anything. Water, 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 water.
Yeah. And it's simple and tangible and anyone can do it. And I think the most important part was like, even you energetically, when you talk about it right now, the empowerment that came from you having a human moment with someone breaking through, like that was the act of vulnerability. That's the energy that was broken through.
Yeah.
Was someone seeing each other and accepting and being comfortable in that space. Like that's healing.
Well, you are unbelievably healing. And I really hope people, I always hope there's at least one person when we speak gets shifted because I feel like, I know, at least from our first conversation, it was me. I hope there were other people too, but I know it was me. And I hope that every conversation we have afterwards, it's at least one other, if not more, because you're right. It's so simple. I mean, that's what kills me. It's like such a simple shift of perception, simple shift of choice. Simple shift of action, that the ripple effect is huge.
It's realistic. It's tangible. You know, it's like, I'm not speaking from fluff. I think it's very adaptable. I think the most important part about our changes is we don't have to change our life in days. You know, you're incorporating new ways to experience your moments. And I had said that to someone because they'd asked me, well, how do you view your day? And I said, I don't view my day. Most people view their day in days. I view my day in hour and minutes. That's how I view my day. That's how I schedule my day. I really view, I mean, down to like, okay, I have 45 minutes to pour into this relationship in my life, 45 minutes to check in with my siblings. Like I view my life from a moment, minutes standpoint. So even when I'm being present with someone, how you said, all the encounters you had, just think about that one shift. How many encounters that you've had that have been wonderful that you've added to your experience in life?
Yeah, so many.
Rich, wealth. Like to me, that is the wealth. Because you're experiencing beings, all walks of life, people that you would have never encountered had you not been open and showed up.
Oh my God, so many really lovely stories. And I think I told you because of you, my daughter and I over... It was Christmas last year. We were here this year, but we were like, because we don't celebrate Christmas anyway. So I'm like, Levy, we made a bunch of cookies. Like we made so many cookies, bought a lot of water, and went and got a bunch of like $5, $10 Starbucks cards. And we made little packages. I think we're like 80 packages. And anyone in Los Angeles, or if you don't know, like the community, the homeless community in Los Angeles, just exponentially getting larger and larger and larger. And you can't pretend to avoid it. Like, so my point being, it's not hard to do a micro gesture every day to someone who may need it. Cause it really is everywhere. If you're pretending it's not there, then you're just literally turning a blind eye. Yeah. It's everywhere. Like no matter where you live in Los Angeles. So, I said like, and I told her, and she at that point been feeding people with me on a regular basis, but I'm like, we're going to go to the tents and we're just going to go give people these Christmas gifts for the holidays. And we did. And I remember, I was like, we got to go kind of early. Cause I didn't want to be doing it in the dark. I mean, I had a 4-year-old at that time.
Yeah.
And it was rainy and cold and I told her ahead of time, I warned her, I'm like, I know you're going to be tired, but we're going to do this because this is a little girl. And we drove to different areas and we would like walk around the blocks. Like first we started right by our house because there was a few blocks that I knew there were tents and we went from tent to tent. And I watched her energy change throughout the day. And that's what was amazing. Like to the point actually to be like, okay, Levy, like cork it a little bit. Cause she'd be like, woo! Like she was like so excited. It was like giving her, and she didn't even quite understand what was happening, but it was just she could feel the energy.
And she knew the energy. Yeah.
And the energy was getting her like Superman. She was like, let's go get more. I want to run there. And I mean, and she was so excited about it. And, And it was lovely. And look, I do think there's something, and you talk about this in the book, but I do think there's something about my daughter or someone young being there, because it takes a level of defense from people. And I think they're so happy to have just a conversation that feels, because I think even with me, no matter how lovely or nice I can be, I'm sure in the back of their head, it's like, okay, she's from here, blah, blah, blah. There's like layers of like judgment filtering through their head. With a child, they know the child has no fucking clue about anything. So there's such a instant comfort, I feel like, relaxation. So I always love it. And I'll never forget the last one we had. It was the last tent, the last thing we had. We did all 80 of them. And it was a woman and a man, and they were in there. And she just was really sweet. At first, she was talking to us. And then halfway through the conversation, she just broke down in tears and was just looking at my daughter and just being like, oh my God, God bless you. God bless you. God bless you. And I pulled Levy aside when we left there. And I go, Levy, like, do you know why she's crying? And I don't remember. She goes, why? Because she lives in a tent. I go, no, she's not crying because she lives in a tent. She's not crying because she doesn't have food. She's crying because you went out of your way today to do something for her. I was like, that's why she was crying. Like, you could, and I could see it. I'm like, the tears came from feeling touched, from feeling seen. It wasn't about circumstance. It was about the human connection. And it was a huge lesson.
Yeah. I mean, and just, and even that, like just teaching Levy so young. I mean, I think about her when she was, when we were doing a party on Skid Row and Pepper, you know, just her connection. It's just it, her having that, those experiences so young, she's going to energetically look at people from energy.
How you is know, he? That,
Pepper is crazy as always. He's great. Just being Pepper, always, always acting up.
Levy and this guy Pepper, who lives on Skid Row, who was at this event, were like best friends. It was hilarious. They were off playing. I think he had her on his shoulders at one point.
He loves her. And you know, and that doesn't happen often. It's so rare that even parents allow that. You know, they really do treat people experiencing homelessness as though they're like not allowed to talk to their kids or like have those connections. And so many of them, so that's big too, because it also validates just the normalization of them as humans to be able to, so you have to think about that. Like so many people are like, no, my kids can't go, but you know, there's this idea already who these people are, that they're monsters or villainized all the time. So when a child can connect with them, there's so many soft beings. And that's why like he felt that connection too, because there was no guard there. We weren't treating anyone as though they were distant. Everyone was welcome. And I mean, she felt it, you know, she was
having the time of her life.
Energy. Yeah. And because it's all energy. It's like children, again, she's more spirit than she is human. So yeah,
I think at one point I was like,
love.
Where is she? You're like, she's up there. I'm like, with who? Pepper. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I was like, as long as it's with Pepper.
And
he gave her, it was so sweet. He had like a plastic digital watch or something. And he gave it to her, which of course was gigantic on her little hand, but she was so happy to have been given this gift. It was so sweet.
Yeah. And that's just powerful because again, where you are implementing the ideas of showing up and curating love, and you're showing her how to curate love, how to be intentional, how to show up for life in her full energy and empowered. Like you said, she felt that energy. That was empowerment. You know, she was, you know, it's like, and there's a high that comes from that. There really is, where you feel so good, because I feel like that's the missing link. We want to connect. That is in our nature, you know? And so when we're giving our souls more of what it wants, I think that energy, it rises, it surfaces. And I think that we feel that. And I feel like a lot of times, always in service, every time I'm serving, it's hard work. It's showing up. I feel so good afterwards. I always say something like, oh, I'm tired. Afterwards, I have so much energy from it, because I feel like it's just like, oh my God, I'm having, like, these are the experiences. That's why we even came here. Like, that's how I see it. It's like, when I'm in the moments, I'm like, this is what I came here for. Not to be too busy in life, not to connect with humans, to share moments with them. Like, that is so, it's so needed. And now more than ever,
look at
the state of the world. Look at where we are. Think about the unlearning that has to come from the pain, from the separation.
Yeah. And look, I think if there's what I love about your teachings so much is, like, yes, we always bring it back to Skid Row and the homeless community, because you've made so many huge shifts and changes, not only in the community, but how people perceive and interact, which I think is huge. But those teachings, those same core principles and teachings go to every single everyday moment with every single person, no matter who you are, where you're from. These teachings apply everywhere. And mm-hmm. they're so important to remember. It's these little micro gestures, a smile you can give anybody, recognizing what you can do in any situation for somebody else, and not in like a martyr way, in just the way of being love for other people. It's so huge. And I think it will shift the world if people will start acting that way. And that's what's so incredible about your book is this, like, it's like, again, you're still talking about what you do every day for a living, but it's with this direct teaching of elevating it to be used in everyday life and all the time.
Yeah.
So huge.
I'm excited about those moments because what I've learned is just those shifts I've made. It doesn't just affect one area of your life, even showing up, you know, for strangers, for people experiencing homelessness that have needs that we can easily meet. But when you change, every person around you benefits from that change, from that openness, from that growth. Like, I think that that's what we don't sometimes often realize is as we're changing, everyone benefits from it. The more we become kind, the more we become patient, the more we start to show up, it's also giving people an invitation, a rallying call to be different themselves.
That's so beautiful.
It's true. Which I think is the most wonderful part is like, I always strive to be better at something, to grow, not for me, but just the benefit of everything I touch and the people around me and the people I love. I want my love to grow so that they can feel an extension of that, a deeper place with that.
Yeah. And you do that every day. I mean, I hope, I say this all the time, but I hope you realize what a gift you are to everybody.
Thank you.
I mean, I consider you such a huge gift to me because you've given me one of the best gifts and which keeps on giving. And it's, I don't know, that's why I always like having you on because I just feel like there's so much you can spread and teach and you're such an amazing human. And this book, everybody get this book. I'm so proud of you. What can we do? What do you guys need? What does Lunch on Me need right now? What are things people in the community can do for you guys?
Of course.
How can they do it?
Of course, granola bars, water. I'll tell everyone that first. If they want to pledge monthly, our pledges start at $10. If you want to order the book, read it and, you know, apply it, share micro gestures, share, you know, I think the most important thing is like, I really want people to share how they're approaching the work with each other, because I think there's ways that I have not written that we can show up, that we can expand on. I think that we need to have that community of sharing that embetterment and that space. And I think that it really does start with micro gestures as a collective and being creative about how we approach and show up, you know, learning, growing, healing. It can be something that's fun and empowering. I'm telling you, it changes you, it shifts you and everything around. So I would love to see the community be vocal about that. I think that as we change, the most wonderful thing we can do is share that change and share those experiences, because that really does shift things for people. I think that we don't give sharing enough credit sometimes, which like even what you said, I never considered myself a teacher. I'm thankful that I'm sharing because that requires vulnerability, but that really does create shifts and aha moments for each other. I think that we are collectively equally in that space. So I would love to see that. I would love to see, you know, how people start to show up in love without reason within their communities, their friends, family, strangers. You know, I think the easiest place to start is strangers, because there isn't that same like connection and dynamic that happens in family and friendship. Sometimes it's easier to start there. You know, you can iron out a lot of kinks and then you take it everywhere.
It's so true. And we all have work to do. There's not one of us who does not have work to do. I think that's the key, is no one's exempt here. Not one person listening to this doesn't have
a way. I was doing work till 3 o'clock this morning, emotionally, like you, when I say you're not lying, I was doing it this morning. I was like, oh my God, I have to be better at this. This is an area I realized I'm falling really, really short. And I was crying. I was crying because I was like, I want to be better. It's like, there's moments where I have where I'm like, I can already see the other side. So I'm like crying to get there, where I'm like, I want to grow and be better and dismantle this thing.
Yeah. Well, the fact that you're aware, you're already halfway there.
Oh my God. That's a long journey. What a journey, right? What a life.
Always a journey until the last breath.
Oh my God. Yes. Until we start again. I love you.
Until we start again. I always adore you. I always adore these conversations. And I'm so thankful you walked into my life and thankful that you get to walk into all these other people's lives too.
And I'm thankful that you have been so wonderful. And just to see you, just you, and always when I see you with your daughter, like oh my God, it's so powerful, Ty. Like, it's so powerful that you show up and you're so intentional, because what you're teaching her, she's going to reach so many. And it's through your example. Trust me, when I see that, I can't help but see me as a child and finding that same love. Like with my grandmother, I see that with you as a mother. It's so powerful.
Oh my God. I thank you. I'm actually speechless. That's unbelievably nice to hear. Thank you.
It's true. You're superhuman, just so you know, for sure.
Oh God. Remind me of that tomorrow.
I love you so much.
Dentalks podcast would not exist without these incredible people: Nicole Rappi, Reem Edon, Hayden Fungheiser, Kim Bielek, and music by Alex Fetter. Thanks for joining us. If you haven't subscribed, please do. And also, wherever you listen, please go and leave us a review. It's so greatly appreciated. It really does help us out. If you want to keep talking about all this stuff, please join our community on our secret Facebook page. Go to Facebook, search Dentalks podcast, and join us there.